For centuries, Pacific Islanders have been sharing stories that connect us across the region. Stories from the Pacific is a weekly program that continues that tradition, bringing you deep and personal stories from a diverse range of people. Athletes, farmers, artists, teachers, activists, entrepreneurs, all united by their Pacific heritage and incredible journeys.
Listen to Stories from the Pacific on your favorite podcast app.
This is an ABC podcast.
The most vulnerable population in terms of climate change is women. They produce the food that you eat on your table every day. They walk hours to go and collect water. Basically, the livelihood of a family is managed by these women, and they need to be here making decisions because they're being affected by food security that's being affected through climate change.
Local knowledge is very important. Sustainable agriculture is not something that is rocket science. Papua New Guineans, we have lived with it, and we know how to be sustainable. And let's use those methods.
Women are the seed keepers. They are peacemakers in any society. So women play a very pivotal role in terms of how we conserve our resources. Little things that women do always have a ripple effect that will affect a family, will affect a clan, and, you know, eventually a tribe and a nation.
Women are the backbone of society in Papua New Guinea. But when it comes to who has the power to make big decisions, particularly around resources, it's the men who dominate this space. Women are often excluded, dismissed, or told to focus on domestic chores. But as we hear, if you want to create sustainable outcomes in development projects, especially with climate change projects, actively and genuinely engaging women is key. I'm Natasha Metten. Sisters, let's talk about women caring for our environment. Women, particularly at the grassroots, are closely connected to the local environment. And more, organizations are tapping into women's local knowledge to help conserve nature. Ruth Konya is the country director for the Nature Conservancy Papua New Guinea program. Ruth, you've recently co-authored a research paper titled "When Solutions to the Climate and Biodiversity Crisis Ignore Gender, They Harm Society and the Planet." Why is it important to actively involve women in your work?
So working in the sector for a while and going into communities, I guess what I have noticed is that women were not actively involved in the discussions or in the activities or in the programs that we have been running, primarily because most of our resources are owned by men. And women do not have ownership rights and user rights, and they were not able to make decisions on how these resources are used. And hence, like, benefits coming into the communities as well, they do not have any say on who gets what. And if ever, you know, if they are given anything at all, you know, it's really small compared to what the men are getting. Working in that area for a while, like, I felt that something needed to happen because women were not equally benefiting.
So you've helped set up the Mangoro Market Mary, where women were able to manage mangroves sustainably. Can you describe what this is?
Okay, so Mangoro Market Mary is a program that's been running in the Nature Conservancy for the last 5 years. So Mangoro means mangrove in Tokpisin, and market being market, and Mary in PNG Tokpisin is women. So it's about engaging women around mangrove conservation and leading them to market opportunities where they're able to earn some money as well for the produce that they get from the mangroves. So the idea came about, as I mentioned earlier, you know, everything is owned by men, and men take the lead in everything. So women are primarily left out, you know, to the kitchen, basically, to prepare meals, while the men come and attend the trainings. They take part in activities, and women just sit at the back without being actively involved. So when we were working through it, we thought, you know, it's about time we do something. And that was when the idea came about. And we wanted to look at some resources where women are actively engaged in. And looking around the, you know, the resources that are available in our communities, we saw that Mangrove was the niche place where women, especially women, would spend a lot of time in, not so much where you see a lot of men in the mangroves. So we thought that would be a good niche to empower women around. So we came up with the idea of building a project where women can be actively involved in managing. So women are empowered around rehabilitating mangroves, conserving mangroves, and making use of whatever produce that they get from the mangroves to sell so that they can earn some money as well.
And what are the flow-on objectives of the project?
So apart from mangrove restoration and mangrove conservation, the objectives that we have are primarily three. So one would be to link them to the markets, which are immediate. And the midterm objective is to link them up to other opportunities they can tap into, like ecotourism, for example. If they preserve the mangrove area, then they can link that up with ecotourism and have some form of income as well. And I think that TED and the long-term sort of benefit that we're looking around that body of work is to engage in blue carbon, not just around mangroves, but including other coastal ecosystems as well, seagrass and seaweed and salt marsh and, you know, eventually corals as well, to just so women are benefiting from blue carbon. I think that the most important thing that I learned in my journey in this conservation space and working in this mangrove market Mary program is the awareness that gender is both about men and women. So when we talk about mangrove market Mary in the communities, we do not exclude men. Men are key players in the program as well. We consider them as champions. So we identify men that can work alongside their women. So some of our trainings, we make it compulsory for husband and wife to attend. So the husband can support the wife in whatever she is doing, because he would have understood the reason why the woman is involved in such activities and why she is playing that role. So it's important that we also include men in our trainings as well.
Is there much awareness around climate change in the community? And how do you build people's awareness?
So, you know, people in the community are, you know, their day-to-day sustenance and living is based on the environment. And obviously, they'll be the first ones to notice that their environment is being affected or impacted by the changing climatic conditions that are affecting them daily. And they know what it is. But over time, you know, situations change, and their ability to cope with the changes that are taking place needed to be boosted with, you know, additional capacity, I would say. And I guess for us, we're more like the conduit that's delivering that kind of information, where we meet up with the traditional way. So what we primarily do is, apart from building the capacity of these women around conservation, we also have awareness programs that we run through our community engagement and gender program. So this is more on giving awareness on the changes that are taking place, making women realize that, you know, both men and women are impacted differently from the impacts of climate change. And women are, you know, placed at the vulnerable stages where they're usually multitasking in the community. They care for children. They do the gardening. They have to go and fetch water. They do all sorts of things. So they're impacted quite differently from men. So when we do our awareness into the program, we make them realize that women play a very important role, and the impacts of climate change are impacting them differently from men. We also bring men into the conversation so that they also understand that they are all affected differently, and that women play a bigger role in terms of how they address changes that are taking place and find adjustments on how they continue to live in the communities, just so men can be able to support them better. So when we go into communities, we encourage men, you know, can you bring in some women as well? So they would bring in, you know, women who are vocal, women who can talk, women who can, who's been to school, who's got some education. So they normally bring one or two women to the group. So we go and talk to these women and find out if there are other women that would be interested in things that that we're talking about here. So these women are influential in the communities usually. So they will be the ones that would go and inspire other women to come and join. And of course, we, as part of our community engagement into communities, we normally advise them that we would like to involve as many women as we can in the project as well. So if the communities would like to work with us, they have to involve women as well.
Ruth, what happens when you include women in your work?
It is very, very important to include women in everything that we do. Like, as I mentioned, men and women are impacted differently by the impacts of climate change and everything that's going on around us. So when we look at women, women's needs, in terms of their needs, it's different from men. Women are the seed keepers. They are peacemakers, you know, in any society that you go. I can go on and on in what women are able to do. So women play a very pivotal role in terms of how we conserve our resources, because they are the ones who's going to pass on the message either verbally or by example. You know, they would bring the children with them into the bush, sit them down, and they would do the gardens, and the children watch. As the child grows up, you know, he or she will immediately take on what their mothers have shown them. And that kind of knowledge is passed on without being written down. So it's important that we involve our women in anything that we do. And the fact that we have to change the power dynamics. So women should be involved in making decisions. They should have some rights into how the resources are being used. They should have access to having those resources. They should have access to financial literacy skills so that any income that they derive from the environment must be saved. They must know how to save so that they can take care of the needs of the family. And anything that you do with women, we must understand, or we must know automatically, that little things that women do always have a ripple effect that will affect a family, will affect a clan, and, you know, eventually a tribe and a nation.
That was Ruth Konya, the country director for the Nature Conservancy Papua New Guinea program.
You're listening to Sisters Let's Talk on ABC Radio Australia.
What happens when you don't include women in environmental development projects? Someone who has seen the impacts firsthand is Selina Tagagao. Selina has worked in environmental conservation for a number of years, and she's currently the project officer for Global Green Growth Institute in PNG.
One classic experience that I had, and this was a project that was done on atoll farming, island atoll farming in Nisan, in Bougainville. So an NGO came in, and I was doing an assessment evaluation on the project on the ground. And I realized at the end of the project, after 3-4 years of implementation, when we were assessing the project, nothing happened after the initial assessment and the work in the 1 year implementation of that project in Nisan Island. So when we asked what really happened, we realized that when they did the training in the beginning, they trained the men to do atoll farming, atoll green farming. And then when they went away, they thought men were doing gardening, but the actual fact was it was the women who were the gardening, and the men were always going fishing. They provided fish. Women provided food from the gardens. And that's basically why the project didn't work, because they targeted the wrong audience. They trained the men who were not gardeners. They, instead of training the woman who was supposed to be gardening and doing these gardens and bringing food to the house. So that's a classic example of women not being recognized, even though they are the one who actually do the work or provide, for example, in terms of climate change, the food security. Women are the one who provides, you know, family household with food every day. We put food on the table. They are the one who do the gardens. So any decisions to do with food security needs to be done by women. I need to be inclusive and women need to be making that decision. Another example is to do with the WASH project.
That's the Water Sanitation and Hygiene Project.
And this was also the same thing. Like, I heard this from a colleague. I wasn't there, but the colleague decided to share with me because it was a woman gender issue. He was doing this meeting on WASH, and he could see like all the men were in underneath the tree discussing what's going to happen with WASH, how many tanks, where will you put it? And while on the other side, the food trucks on the other side had women carrying buckets of water walking up and down, you know. While the men were making decisions, the women were going collecting buckets of water. And that's one classic example that we tend to forget that the people who do the work are not part and parcel of the whole decision-making or meeting, strategizing.
So in your work, you empower women in the projects and decision-making around climate change initiatives. How much do they know about climate change?
One of the biggest challenges is awareness, basic understanding of what is climate change and how it affects women. Because people look at climate change as sea level rising, and that's it. Climate change affects sea level, and the islands are sinking. Interestingly, I was in Alatau and talking to one of the key advisors for the provincial administration. And the question he asked was, why are you doing climate change in the Highlands province? Isn't climate change about sea level? And that kind of triggers the idea that, yes, there's so many misunderstandings of what is climate change and how is climate change affecting people. So basically, the awareness part of it actually also contributes to women trying to think again about what they feel every day. Because we all know that climate change affects not just the rising sea level. It's not about just the rising sea level or salt intrusion. It's also about increasing temperatures, changes in rainfall patterns, changes in droughts, like frequent droughts as opposed to, you know, small short droughts in the past. And frost, and, you know, people think that landslide is a natural disaster that's came about because our Heavenly Father is mad with the people of that particular tribe and now, you know, making landslides in the highlands or creating volcano in Rabaul or, you know, increasing flood in Morobe province and all this. But so that's the biggest challenge we have. People need to really be able to be aware of what is climate change and what is increasing temperature. How is increasing temperature affecting the food crop? How is drought affecting the food crop? How is heavy rains affecting the food crop? These are the small things that are contributing to women not fully understanding what is climate change. And then in the end, when there is climate change meeting, you want to see anyone in the community. As much as possible as a development worker, I go out there and I make sure, like, if there is a meeting, I make sure ask, okay, where are the women? Do we have women in the village? Why aren't they here in the meeting? Sometimes I'm challenged that, you know, they're in the garden, they're looking after houses, they're doing women chores, don't worry about them. But as soon as, you know, we go into explaining that, you know, the most vulnerable population in terms of climate change is women. They produce the food that you eat on your table every day. They walk hours to go and collect water. Basically, the livelihood of our family is managed by these women, and they need to be here making decisions because they're being affected by food security that's being affected through climate change. So there more awareness is needed, and those kind of thinking to actually go out and make sure doing focus group discussions with women alone actually enables them to come out from their, you know, nutshells and be able to talk freely about what's affecting them. Only then will they be able to, you know, contribute meaningfully to any big meetings that men are doing in terms of climate change work in the community level.
That's Selena Tagagao, the Project Officer for Global Green Growth Institute in PNG, empowering women when it comes to environmental development projects.
You're listening to Sisters Let's Talk on ABC Radio Australia.
So we've heard about some grassroots community projects to address climate change, but what is the PNG government doing? Debra Sungi is the Acting Managing Director of the Climate Change and Development Authority. Debra, what does your organization do and how are you involving women in your work?
Climate Change and Development Authority is a coordinating agency which we coordinate together with approximately 10 sectors across the country, inclusive of the provincial government and the local level governments. And our job is to ensure that we drive the necessary climate action policies within each of the sectors. So planning process, decision making has to be inclusive to ensure that there is mitigation and there is adaptation component in every development or policies that is taking place in each of the sectors that operates within the country. So that is basically our role. And for me, as the highest decision maker in the organization, I ensure that those decisions are inclusive of women and people with disability. So we have a couple of key documents that we have ensured that there is to be at least 50% of representation in all decision making, especially to do with our project, has to be women, and it includes women. And we have to ensure, for us, before giving any approval through the processes, we have to do compliance and ensure that that is being done accordingly.
Debra, as you've mentioned, being the highest decision maker, you've been appointed as the role as the acting managing director. Could you tell us what's it like working in a space that is predominantly known to have been occupied by men?
So as you will note, in the public service in Papua New Guinea, there's currently seven women, I'd say, in the public service managing the agencies and or being the heads of the agencies. And I am currently the added female into the group of women leading the organization. And It is a challenge. It is a challenge when you get the job at the first hand or when you get to get the appointment. There's always challenges. There's always negativity that comes with appointments being done, especially in a society that is male dominated. I guess the government has really seen the role of women to be of that importance, and they have given significance as well to ensure that women are given the same opportunity as men. However, in like I said, in a male-dominated society, there's some issues that I say that drives as well the challenges that we see or we face as women leading the organizations. So when I say challenges, is also to do with such issues as security of us having to be sitting at those top positions within the organizations. It's often difficult in countries like Papua New Guinea, sitting in an office, working late throughout 1 to 2 to 3 o'clock, sometimes in the morning, trying to get things done. And your security is paramount.
What's the most important thing you've learned about communicating climate change effectively?
The most important thing is very effective and strong stakeholder engagement and collaboration. Climate change can never be solved through one organization. It has to be solved, and it can be solved, but we are trying to minimize those impacts that we face. And it can only be done when we have an effective stakeholder coordination. And it should be well stated in terms of ensuring that we tackle climate change. We work with everyone, and it's not one person's job to minimize those impacts.
How do you engage at the local level within these networks?
Whatever support that is needed, we will find ways to come through the provincial government to ensure that it is being given to the provinces. But local knowledge is very important. You know exactly how to do sustainable development. Sustainable agriculture is. This is not something that is rocket science. Papua New Guineans, we have lived with it, and we know how to be sustainable. And let's use those methods. We are here to ensure that you cut down trees, you plant another tree. Or you living along the coast, you know that mangrove is important, so you don't need to destroy this very important plant. But at the same time, if you are harvesting for firewood, you also have to replant to ensure that it protects and acts as a buffer for the sea level and also for fish to breed in as well. So those local knowledge are there, while Climate Change and Development Authority comes in at the policy level and coordination. We also, on another role in terms of addressing those issues, have the role of mobilizing necessary climate finance. For example, the King Tides. We have responsible provincial governments that we have through climate change established the provincial climate change committees. And through those committees, we ensure that they have their plans in order for us to get any funding to build those seawalls to ensure that they are safe, that communities are safe from the king tides or even from the sea level. The same with our communities up in the highlands in terms of landslips, flooding. Those things we will actually drive you through the provincial plans that each of those provinces work with us to develop. Government funding is very minimum to us every year. So as the NDA try to do is we go out there, we mobilize the required finance that we see, but the provincial government has to really show its commitment in working with us to drive this going forward.
That's Deborah Sungi, Acting Managing Director for PNG's Climate Change and Development Authority. If you want to create successful initiatives to address climate change, it's important to collaborate with everyone affected by it, including women. I'd like to thank our guests, Ruth Konya, Selina Tagagao, and Deborah Sungi. Thank you so much for joining me, Natasha Metten, for Sisters Let's Talk on ABC Radio Australia, a weekly show by Pacific Island Women for Pacific Island Women, where we get together to talk about the issues that are important to us. If you've missed an episode of the show, catch up on our podcast. Just search for Sisters Let's Talk wherever you get your podcasts or key us into your favorite search engine. Sisters Let's Talk is presented by me, Natasha Metten. Our producers are Kim Lester and Rachel Bongiorno, and Faleangafulu Inga Stunzna is our executive producer. Sisters Let's Talk is produced on Darumbal, Yagara and Turubo land and the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nation, and we pay respects to elders past and present. Thank you.